I'm Joy Cardine with you on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's coming up on 10 minutes past 8 o'clock on this Tuesday, January the 9th. Will Congress fund a surge of some 20,000 troops to Iraq? Part of the new strategy for Iraq that President Bush is expected to announce in an address to the nation tomorrow night. We will, by the way, be carrying that address to the nation at 8 o'clock tomorrow night here on the Ideas Network. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi says if the president wants to add to this mission, he's going to have to justify it, while emphasizing Congress will not cut off funding for troops now in Iraq. She said the White House will no longer have a blank check for expanding the war effort. We're going to talk this hour about what the president is expected to announce tomorrow night and how Congress is going to react, how Congress is already reacting. Here are some of the ideas that Democrats are voicing. One Democrat has suggested legislation to limit the number of troops in Iraq, while others have discussed a non-binding measure calling on President Bush to withdraw troops. A few have talked about holding a fresh vote on authorizing the war in Iraq. And again, some congressional Democrats say they might try to block funds for this short-term troop surge in Iraq. How do you want your congressional representative to deal with this? 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. In Madison, 263-1890, 263-1890. Or send an email with your question or comment to talk@wpr.org. Please include your first name and your community with your email. Our guest is Peter Fenn, Democratic strategist and president of the Fenn Communications Group. He's been working on political campaigns and issues campaigns for more than 20 years. He was the founder of the Center for Responsive Politics, and he joins us by telephone. Good morning.
Good morning. Great to be with you.
Yeah, thanks a lot for being with us. It says here in this AP story this morning, in a blunt warning to the White House, congressional Democrats said yesterday they may seek to deny funds for the type of short-term troop buildup that President Bush is expected to announce for Iraq on Wednesday night. That's pretty strong talk.
Well, and you know, it's strong talk, not only from Democrats, but there are Republicans who are very concerned about this escalation as well. Chuck Hagel, a Vietnam veteran from Nebraska, has spoken out against it. You have a number of other senators and members of the House of Representatives, too. I think that the problem is that this is a very hard sell for the president right now. The war is not going well. It has moved into, by all accounts, a civil war. There are very few parts of that country that are secure. And the real question, of course, in people's minds is, you know, what does a 20,000 troop escalation do? And moving some troops around within Iraq, does that help? The promises from a government that can't seem to even control the death of Saddam Hussein properly, let alone the roving bands of terrorists that exist. You know, it looks like a situation that's spun militarily, at least, out of control.
Yeah. Well, it's not just the 20,000 troops, according to the reports. It's money to have provide some economic development for the Iraqis and setting political bench points. Isn't there more to it than just a surge?
Well, absolutely. Mm-hmm. I think this president is going to try to convince the American people tomorrow night that this is a comprehensive plan. But of course, we've already authorized over $20 billion for rebuilding Iraq, and very little of that has been spent. The unemployment rate, this is a key statistic, the unemployment rate in Iraq now is over 40%. There was a front page story in the Washington Post last week about their health care system, which of course is overrun with victims of this violence, but has just fallen apart. It used to be a decent health care system. Pregnant women cannot only not get to a hospital, weaving their way through terrorism in the streets. But once they get there, the OBGYNs have been intimidated and aren't there at the hospital to help them deliver babies. I mean, this society has broken down, and can we fix it? No matter how much money we put in there. The other part of this is that the really sad part is that this executive branch goes up to the Congress with supplementals. They don't even put it in the regular budget, don't have hearings on the money, don't have accountability with the expenditures. The Iraq Study Group report, Lee Hamilton and James Baker cited incident after incident where there was no accountability by Congress on the expenditure of funds over there. So I think that you know, one of the things that Joe Biden, the chairman of the Foreign Relations Committee, and others are trying to do right now is they are trying to get a handle on this oversight and trying to find out whether there really will be a new strategy for Iraq, or whether we're just going to continue to throw good money after bad.
The president certainly doesn't have a whole lot of people in his corner for this, but those who do support it cite that he's exhibiting rare courage, political courage, going against the polls, standing alone for the most part on this to make one last stab at stabilizing Iraq, to having success in that country. Is there anything to be said for that?
Well, you know, I think if he had a plan and really believed in the plan and had folks behind him, you know, you could sort of understand saying, look, I'm not putting my finger up to the political winds and going with the majority here. I'm doing what I think is right. But the trouble, I think, with his approach is, you know, not only does he not have the support of the American people, but the international community, who were all in our corner after September 11th, 2001, now have turned against us. The Middle East situation is worse, and I think partially because of this war in Iraq. The unstable situation in Lebanon is very concerning, and I think that the trouble with this president is that he's more bullheaded on this than anything else. He's decided that he can't lose a war. And, you know, the scary thing is, for those of us old enough to remember the Vietnam era, it seems like we're doing the same thing here. By 1968 in this country, where about 20,000 Americans had died in Vietnam, most people began to see that this was not working. Well, that war lasted another 7 years and another 35,000 American lives. Mm-hmm. And this president, I'm afraid, is going to be turning over this war to the next president. I think that, you know, there are some who are very cynical, some very conservative columnists, actually, like Charles Krauthammer, have said, you know, this isn't about winning this thing. They know that militarily that's impossible. This is about sending it over to the next guy's watch.
Speaking of that, I mean, despite all the talk from Congress, Republicans and Democrats, and the will of the American people, President Bush can pretty much do whatever he wants.
You know, this is wrong. I mean, this is wrong. My good friend, and I watched him on Meet the Press, Joe Biden, said, you know, we really can't do much on the funding of this because it would not be constitutional. Well, my old boss, Frank Church, who was a senator from Idaho and later chairman of the Foreign Relations Committee, teamed up with John Sherman Cooper, a Republican senator from Kentucky, in 1970, and they authored the Cooper Church Amendment, which prohibited funds for incursions into Cambodia and Laos. Now, you know, that kind of an amendment clearly could be applicable here. You could have an amendment which said that, you know, that the Congress will not fund an escalation of 20,000 troops or whatever the number that the president puts out there. Or you could even say that, you know, that you cap the number of troops and that will not fund over 135,000. The problem with this is political. You need folks who have less profile, more courage, maybe in this kind of situation, because anytime you really use the power of the purse as a member of Congress, you come under criticism that you're not funding the troops. But this is a different situation. What you would say is, absolutely, we're funding the folks over there. Absolutely, they should have the Kevlar vest that they need and the updated Humvees and the weapons that they need. But what we are saying is no more. We are not going to authorize any more troops over there. So, I'm not saying that it's going to be done, but I think you might see, and I'm not, I doubt, to be perfectly frank, that it would pass right out now in the Congress, but I think you may find that there is a bipartisan move by some members to try to deal with the power of the purse here, which I think would be healthy for the country.
Yeah. We're talking about the president expected to call for an increase of 20,000 troops in Iraq in an address to the nation tomorrow night, and the reaction already from congressional leaders, mainly Democrats, but some Republicans too, saying that they don't want to give the White House a blank check for this. They may try to block funds for short-term troop buildups in Iraq. We wonder what you think, what questions you have. 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, in Madison, 263-1890. Should Congress fund or not fund a surge in troops in Iraq? I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This is the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. Hoping you'll stay tuned. Coming up, it's At Issue with Ben Marins this afternoon between 4 and 6. After more than 3 years of planning and legislative hurdles, a new buying cooperative for health care insurance hopes to bring down rates for Wisconsin's small businesses and individuals. After 5, Ben will talk with supporters of co-op care. Coming up after 5 o'clock. We're talking about the president's new strategy for Iraq and how the Congress is likely to deal with that. Will Congress deny funds for a surge in troops in Iraq? The president expected to announce tomorrow night that he wants to send 20,000 more troops to Iraq. Some in Congress warning that they may seek to deny funds for this type of short-term troop buildup. We wonder from you, what do you want to see Congress do about this new strategy for Iraq? 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. In Madison, 263-1890. 263-1890. Talking with Peter Fenn, who is a Democratic strategist and president of the Fenn Communications Group. He is or was the founder of the Center for Responsive Politics. And Peter Fenn, I'm kind of shocked because our lines, we have a couple of callers, but we have many open lines on this. Do you think we're the American people are a little bit feel a little bit helpless over this?
Well, I hope it's not due to my
I do think
Joy that this is very frustrating for the American people that they're not sure what they can do. You know, this does contrast greatly with the Vietnam period, where demonstrations were being organized. There was great upheaval on college campuses. Many of us were demonstrating in the streets. You know, there was a draft then, Joy. A lot of people were having to go into the Army, Navy, Marines, not by their own choosing, and there was an immediate threat to their livelihood, they thought, and this one is a little different, and I think it's in a way it's unfortunate that the people feel so powerless right now, I think, about what they can do. But they shouldn't. I mean, I think one of the things that's critical here is that despite what he says, this president has got to listen to the American people. The members of Congress have to listen to the American people. You know, we're not the NYPD over there. I mean, we cannot go in and lose lives and send our young men and women back severely harmed by a war like this and stand by and do nothing. And I really think the more that members of Congress hear from folks around the country that this is not working, that there's a political solution that must be put in place here, not a military solution. We're not going to win this thing by putting in more troops and by fighting in the streets. That's not going to happen.
I knew that little prompt would fill up our lines, which is the case. Paul in Milwaukee is with us. Hi, Paul. You're on the air.
Thank you. You know, I'm thoroughly opposed to this war, and I'm really disgusted with this incompetent commander-in-chief and president. But this isn't the way you fight wars. This war should be fought by generals, not by politicians. And it may not take 20,000 more troops. It may take 40,000 more. You have to secure that area before you can start building an infrastructure and putting that 40% unemployment down to 4% where it needs to be. Thanks.
Yeah. Paul makes a very good point here, I think, and it really is kind of strange because here is the President of the United States now saying he is not going to listen to the military people. I mean, the quotes for the last 3 years are, the folks on the ground are determining the troop levels. People there are saying what should be done. And actually, you know, the fact is that the generals were saying we need more troops initially. And this is the kind of sad thing about this, is that even folks who I disagree with now, but guys like Joe Lieberman and a lot of Republicans like John McCain said early on, you know, in order to really secure this, we need 200,000 more troops. Well, you know, this was not the Department of Defense and this president's approach. So I think you could argue strong mismanagement. I think the question now, however, is if you put more troops in, could that even stabilize a situation that has gone into civil war? In other words, would 40,000 troops do it? Would 60? Would 100,000 troops? Or would it just simply result in more casualties and more deaths?
Yeah. Thanks to Paul for the call. Democrats, if there is one plan, it is to start withdrawing troops from Iraq?
I think there's pretty universal agreement that turning this over to Maliki and the Iraqi government is the way to go. I think the other thing that a lot of people are pushing very hard on, which has gone into the back burner lately, is more talks with other countries in the region to try and get them involved to stabilize the situation. I mean, ultimately, this isn't about what the United States wants. It's what the Iraqis want. And I think our refusal to include other countries in the region in this effort has hurt us from the very beginning.
Yeah. We did have a caller who didn't want to go on, who didn't think that really was a plan, though. That's just going to leave a vacuum and, I guess, the whole region at risk. What about that?
I think there's no question that there are a lot of risks involved here. I mean, the argument that people make is, look, if we begin pulling out, things go into more chaos than what happens. And I think for anybody to say they know for sure what's going to happen would be, you know, they would be foolhardy. But, you know, there is a feeling on the part of some people. There's a fellow named Peter Galbraith who's written a book about Iraq, and basically he says, look, what you've got to do in order to stabilize this is you have to acknowledge that you have the Sunni Shiites and the Kurds, and you have to give them their area of autonomy within a confederation. You have to figure out a way to divide up the oil revenue, and you have to give these people a say in their own lives. And that if this becomes that the vast majority of Shiites now seeking revenge on the Sunnis, and that you're going to have, you know, you're going to have that kind of chaos. And I think the other issue is what does Iran do? What does Syria do? How involved do they become in Iraq? So, you know, there are no, I mean, if this were easy, we would have solved it. But but I think the trouble is that right now, I think, you know, my view on this is we have created a bigger problem than we started with. And you know, that Colin Powell once said to the president early on in the Iraq, he said, you know, you break it, you own it. Mm-hmm. And this president, I hate to say it, but he broke it.
Carol in Gutenberg, Iowa. Hi, you're on the air.
Oh, thank you. I guess kind of two questions that both go back to Joe Biden. My understanding is that Senator Biden supported this dividing Iraq into three separate
regions.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Mm-hmm. The other thing is, you know, it seems like when the Democrats say they may seek to deny funding, you know, that may so often stands out, and it almost seems like there's not the political will to do it. And I was just wondering if there would be any comparison, you know, when the drug bill was signed in the dead of night, the pharmaceutical industry was the one that was driving it. And I'm just wondering if the contractors have anything to do with driving the war effort in Iraq in a similar way, and I'll take my answer off the air.
Those are good questions, Carol. First of all, Joe Biden has been supportive of the Galbraith plan. Peter Galbraith actually worked as a staff member in the Senate Foreign Relations Committee with Joe Biden, so they know each other very well. The question about contractors, I'm not, I think they do obviously have influence on this, but I think this is a larger question, and I think my guess is that that's not the driving force on the financing. The other important part of all this, I think, is with a change to a Democratic House and a Democratic Senate after the November elections, the ability to hold hearings and to have more oversight obviously is much greater. And Joe Biden is going to hold 3 weeks of hearings starting this week on this issue, much like J. William Fulbright held hearings during the Vietnam War. And he mentioned on Meet the Press on Sunday that even though he had concerns about the power of the purse being used, he was considering a resolution of disapproval, that may be a possibility. And in a sense, that is a that is rhetorical. I mean, it doesn't have a lot of teeth in it, but you know, it would send a very clear message to the president and this administration that there's a large number of folks in Congress certainly have concerns about the conduct of the war and the approach that the president is taking.
Yeah, but by saying we may deny funds, or you know, we're going to really scrutinize this, we might not fund this effort or this surge. That's a lot of tough talk, but really probably not tough action, right? They're not going to.
I think the two issues here. Could somebody introduce this and say, probably will. Yeah, that may happen. Will it pass right now? Mm. I doubt it. I don't think you can. I mean, folks are first of all, I think they are very nervous politically about it. Secondly, I think they want to see what happens, how this begins to take shape in the coming months. But I tell you, I don't think this Congress or the American people are going to give this president 2 years of more of a failed policy. I just can't imagine it. And I think you're already seeing, you know, look, the poll recently last week on military families. I mean, only 35% of military families were supporting this president on the war. Yeah. That's a very scary number for the president, I think.
Yeah, I think the last time I saw a poll, and maybe there's been one since then, was like 10 to 12% of those polled thought that increasing troops to try, you know, one last gasp effort was the way to go. So,
exactly. There's a real concern with that, and that's why I think the president tomorrow night is going to emphasize these other parts of the solution, the rebuilding funds to decrease this unemployment problem, efforts to build hospitals, to build electric grids, to improve the water and sewer in the country. But, you know, Joy, he did that 3 years ago. He mm-hmm. talked about that. Congress appropriated over $20 billion to do just that. And it's gotten worse, not better.
Patrick in Madison is with us. Hi, Patrick. You're on the air.
Thank you. I was wondering if Congress or anybody really has created a sensible timeline for troop withdrawal, because with such a timeline, I would support any sort of troop escalation, whether it's 20,000 or 200,000. And I'm actually a liberal, so basically I support a troop increase as long as there's a timeline of like a year or something to pull everybody out of there. And I don't think that anybody has ever made a timeline.
Yeah. What sort of talk is there about that, Peter Finn?
That's a very good question, Patrick. Basically, you've had some individual members of Congress who've talked about it and some outside of Congress. John Murtha, of course, had a timeline in mind, and folks have talked about 6 months, a six-month period with the beginning of withdrawal of troops on an organized level. But the president has said, look, I'm not going to do that. The military situation on the ground will dictate that. You know, we all a year ago, if we were talking on this show, would have been predicting. In fact, a lot of us did. I did. Pat Buchanan, who I do a regular Saturday morning show on MSNBC with, he and I both agreed a year ago that there would be a pullout, that the troop level would probably not be at the 100,000 level by the election time. Well, clearly that never happened. There was no de-escalation, or if you will, of troops, and so I think a lot of people worry, Patrick, that if they agree to something with this president, that they're not sure in 6 months or a year whether there would actually be withdrawal. I do think this president will say some things tomorrow night about Iraq reaching certain standards of governance and accountability, and that he expects that the Maliki government will do certain things to indicate that they're taking control and taking charge. Maliki has said he's going to devote funds and he's going to move troops into Baghdad to try to stabilize things there. But you know, the so far we have not seen much accountability either on the part of our own government or the government in Baghdad.
Next we go to, thanks Patrick, Mike in Appleton. Hi Mike, you're on the air.
Yeah, good morning. My wish or my hope is that the politicians, be they Democrats, Republicans, or Independents, really take the decisions that have to be taken that are good for the country long term, and you know that they take their political fingers out of the wind to see which way the current is blowing, and that decisions be taken long term. Thank you.
Yeah.
I think that's a very good point and very important in situations like this. You know, things get caught up in political rhetoric and campaigns, but that, you know, the bottom line is what's best for the country, what's best for the region, what's best for the world environment. I think one of the sort of sad things about where we are in Iraq right now is that I don't think that it has helped us in the war on terror. In fact, one could make the argument, and the facts seem to bear it out, that more terrorists have been created because of this. We've ignored Afghanistan, which is becoming a serious problem. Obviously, Osama bin Laden is still out there somewhere. But more important even than some of that has been the you know, what this has really done to our military. I think you have a demoralized fighting force now. I think, you know, we used to say we should have a military that could fight 2.5 wars out there. There's no way that our military force can do that. The readiness is been hampered. Our equipment, our research and development. It's going to take a while to come out of this past 6 years and rebuild our military and rebuild our fighting force and have weapon systems that work.
We're talking with Peter Fenn. He's a Democratic strategist, president of the Fenn Communications Group. He's been working on political campaigns and issue campaigns for more than 20 years. He was founder of the Center for Responsive Politics. We are talking about how Congress is likely to react to President Bush's call tomorrow night for a surge of 20,000 troops in Iraq. The president is expected to address the nation and outline his new strategy for Iraq tomorrow night at 8 o'clock our time. We'll carry that address live on the Ideas Network. Democrats yesterday warned that they might seek to deny funds for this type of short-term troop buildup that the president is expected to announce. We're talking about how Congress is reacting to the new strategy for Iraq and what Congress is likely to do about the plan for Iraq, and welcoming your thoughts and questions for our guest. 1-800-642-1234. In Madison, 263-1890, 263-1890. Democratic congressional leaders yesterday said they don't plan on giving the president a blank check and that the president will have to justify escalating the mission in Iraq. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. You're listening to the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. I hope you stay tuned. Kathleen Dunn is with you between 9 and 11 this morning. After 9, Kathleen and her guests will discuss the impact of efforts by schools to comply with the federally mandated wellness programs. That's coming up after 9. We're talking about what Congress is likely to do once President Bush calls for a surge in troops in Iraq, which is what he's expected to call for tomorrow night when he unveils his new strategy for Iraq. Congress yesterday, at least some congressional leaders, saying that they're not convinced that a surge in troops is the way to go, and they could deny funding for the surge while not denying any funding for the troops currently in Iraq. Other Democrats saying that they would like legislation to limit the number of troops. Others talking about a non-binding measure calling on the president to withdraw troops. Some have talked about holding a fresh vote on authorizing the war. Peter Fenn, what do you expect these other resolutions to be debated, discussed?
I think so. I think what you're going to have, Joy, in the next few weeks are hearings on both the Senate side and the House side on the war in Iraq. The Democrats have concentrated, as you know, in passing a series of domestic pieces of legislation. We'll focus on more of that in the weeks and months ahead. But you know, the war in Iraq is front and center, I think, on people's minds here, and so I think you're going to see an increased amount of questioning on the part of both Democrats and Republicans of the strategy. You know, one of the things I think that's happening here is that you have folks less willing to accept the status quo, accept, you know, the stay the course was the president's mantra for several years. They got off that during the political campaign because it was hurting them. But, you know, to a lot of people, this seems like more of the same. And I think you're just not going to see the acceptance of the policy. It is not unlike what we saw in the late 60s on the Vietnam War. I mean, the idea, I remember as a kid, you know, you'd talk to folks, they say, well, we just have to trust our government on this. We're not on the ground. We're not generals. We're not military people. We don't really know what's going on in South Vietnam. But as the war went on, as more people were dying for apparently no cause, no reason, then you saw the public turning against the policies and demanding change. And I do think that this election in November was a change election, and that folks said, look, we want a new direction. We want a new course. We want a new way. And now the question really is, how much leeway the Congress and the American people are going to give this president with after his speech tomorrow night.
Yeah, and as you noted in the beginning, it's not just Democrats. Republican Senator John Cornyn was asked, could the president expect full Republican support for his new plan? And the senator replied bluntly, no. I think it's one of those subjects that's going to divide Congress just as it's divided the country, Cornyn said. Cindy in Wauwatosa. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I had heard at one point that al-Maliki had forbidden the surge to go into Sadr City. Do you know anything about that?
Yes, that is absolutely true, that they are extraordinarily concerned about Sadr City. They don't think that they would be successful there. That of course is an area unto itself in terms of a military group that has been active, and the problem here is that this is a city of 6 million people, Baghdad. So it's not easy to quell the violence there at all, but my understanding is that they are going to try to go into about 23 neighborhoods within Baghdad. They're going to concentrate there, and they're going to stay out of Sadr City.
Yeah. Thanks, Cindy. Scott in Green Bay is with us now. Hi, Scott.
Good morning. Let me preface my comments and questions with the fact that your guess rate, 6 million people, I don't think sending 20,000 troops in is going to do anything. I think that's such an insignificant amount to send into a city that size. So I'm going to say I disagree with the plan of sending 20,000 surge of troops in.
You would send more, is what you're saying, Scott.
Well, if you're gonna do it to win, you got to win. Here's the problem. Peter Fenn talked about the military being demoralized. I think what they're demoralized about more than anything else, and I've got so many friends that are in the military, multiple friends that have spent over a year in Baghdad. What's demoralizing to them is to hear people talk about how horrible it is and how nothing good is being accomplished. I've got friends that have come back and talked about the good they've done, but it's never discussed. It's never discussed the good things that the military is doing, the servicemen. And my biggest question is, and that was just a point I wanted to make, my biggest question is, can somebody explain John Cain's position? And I know he's kind of the darling of the media, and he has been for a few years, the maverick.
We're having a hard time hearing you, Scott, with that highway noise or whatever that is. Sounds like you're taking off in an airplane, but we get you. John McCain, he wants a surge in troops, doesn't he, Peter Fenn?
Right, he does. In fact, he wanted a much larger surge to the point Scott was making. He was pushing this way back, and of course he comes from a different view of the Vietnam experience, which was that if we really wanted to win that, we could have won it, which again is everybody's going to debate that for centuries. But the point, I think there is a good point that Scott raises, which is, look, on the ground in selected places, the military is doing their best. These are folks that are putting their lives on their line for their country. They're over there, sometimes on second and third tours of duty, leaving their families behind. This is not easy. This is very hard. And I know that on a day-to-day basis and in a neighborhood that they feel like they're making some progress, but I think a lot of them do have a sort of larger view and are saying, my gosh, I'm doing my best, and I have some successes I can point to, but clearly the numbers of Iraqis that are dying, the numbers of Americans that are dying, December was the worst month of the year. This war clearly is not going well. They also, from what I hear, and Scott may be closer to this than I am, but they were not pleased with Rumsfeld. They were not pleased with the way the war was being conducted. They felt that a lot of the military folks on the ground felt that they were being overruled, and in some cases, when they were, some of them thought that there should be more troops. And when, I mean, they think that John McCain's solution of a couple of years ago, which was having 200,000 to 300,000 troops in there, may have been the way to go. Now, again, you can debate that. I'm still not clear that ultimately was correct. I do. My problem with this, you see, and again, I'm not a military strategist, but my problem with this is, I think it's basically a political solution. You're not going to have two people sitting down at a peace table signing a peace agreement at the end of this one. I mean, basically, you have to have a solution which takes hold politically, and where the warring factions can coexist in some fashion.
Thank you, Scott. Appreciate the call. John in Appleton. Hi, you're on the air.
Yes. I think one of the things that George Bush will not mention tomorrow night is the cost of this surge, and is something that has been kind of avoided very much, first, by doing these supplemental appropriations. And what's interesting now is that the Democrats are reinstating PAYGO rules, where any of these supplemental appropriations, the will have to be paid for either by tax increases or other spending cuts. And I was wondering what the possibility might be of an income tax surcharge similar to what Lyndon Johnson proposed during the Vietnam War to help cover the cost of this policy.
That is a very good question, a very good point. I think this president will not, hell will have to freeze over before he supports a tax surcharge of any sort. But I think that that raises just a very important point, and that is that, which I was probably not being very articulate about earlier, but there hasn't been a great deal of sacrifice called for on the part of the American people. Sacrifice by our military men and women over there, absolutely, but not sacrifice on the part of Americans. They haven't felt it in their pocketbooks, and they haven't felt it in their daily lives. And that is to many of us is a crime. If you're going to call on a country to engage in a war that lasts longer than World War II, there should be some kind of shared sacrifice out there. And we're not, the folks that are going to sacrifice are our grandchildren who are going to have to pay the bill for this thing.
Yeah, I don't know if he'll say it in his address tomorrow night, but the president is expected to call for an additional $100 billion for the war, and the congressional leaders interviewed yesterday said that that's going to receive close scrutiny. So $100 billion for this surge?
I think plus the other things that some of that was planned beforehand, but they start out with 99.7. I love it. Sounds like 99.95 or something. But 99.7 billion, and now it's going to be up over and above that. But again, this should go through the regular budget process, not be a supplemental. And I think he's supposed to provide on February 4th the specifics of exactly how much and for what. And you're right, Joy. You can bet that this is going to get a lot more scrutiny than it ever has before.
Bill in Viroqua, hi, you're on the air.
Good morning. I just have one question. I am a Vietnam veteran, and my question is, where will President Bush be able to get the troops to increase the Army by 20,000?
That's a good question. My understanding is that he's going to redeploy military from other places around the world, but that there has been an agreement with the Army that he would try to increase the troop strength of the U.S. Army by 80,000 to 100,000 men and women over the course of the next year to 2 years. That was part of this agreement, because I think that the military were asking the very same question. Look, if we're going to do this, we're going to have to take them from somewhere. And we can't take them out of Afghanistan at this point. So they'll have to come from other military bases. And also the question is this, which I'm not quite clear on, but the scary thing I think is, again, requiring people to come back for additional tours. Who thought that they were through?
Yeah.
Who thought that they were done?
Looking at some reaction from some of the congresspeople who met with President Bush about this plan, Senator Edward Kennedy told reporters after meeting with President Bush that he wants the president's plan put to a vote. How do you think that would turn out?
That's a very interesting question. I'm not sure it will come to the whole plan for a vote, but somebody may introduce a resolution of disapproval, as Joe Biden has talked about. A lot of Republicans who came out of that meeting yesterday clearly were not 100% on board. A lot of folks said, look, we'll listen. We want to have hearings on this. We want to discuss it. We want to look at the plan in some detail. And the president, I do think, has a heck of a selling job to do here to get the support of not only the members of Congress on both sides of the aisle, but the American people as well.
Yeah, he'll try to do that with what he says tomorrow night.
Yep.
Yeah. Speaking of Republicans, Senator Gordon Smith, speaking to reporters after meeting with President Bush yesterday, said that he opposes a troop surge. He thinks the Iraqis need to settle their own differences, and he doesn't want American forces caught in the middle of an Iraqi civil war. So he has to convince Republicans like Gordon Smith to go along with them, too.
That's right, and I think that's the biggest problem that he has, is if the members of his own party begin to question the policy and put pressure on them, it makes it very, very difficult. To your question earlier, Joy, how much will this president be willing to go against the country and the political grain?
Randy in Madison, hi, you're on the air.
Yes, good morning. Great show. I have just a comment. I've been against this war since well before it began. I saw right through the pretenses, and my continual complaint about this is that it's been a colossal waste of human life and money. We could have pulled all 50 states out of their debt, paid for universal health care, and paid for countless foreign aid programs with all the money that's being wasted in this war, and we'd be much further ahead as a country. That's true homeland security.
Yeah. So, what do you want to do now, Randy?
Pull out. Let's cut the losses. We're throwing good money after bad.
Yeah. Peter Finn.
Yeah, I think Randy's got it right. I mean, I think the sad part of this is that if you read the political biographies of George Herbert Walker Bush, the president's father, you read the biography of James Baker, and they both explain in those books why they did not go in and try to depose Saddam Hussein in 1991. And the conclusion was that we would become an occupying force. We would not be greeted as liberators. We would get involved in internecine internal warfare, which would cost us lives and money. And, you know, in a sense, they had it right. This president had it wrong. If he was going to do what he did, you know, and of course, discovering there were no weapons of mass destruction there. Once you deposed him and once you captured Saddam Hussein, we should have pulled out of there. But, you know, woulda, coulda, shoulda is easy for us Monday morning quarterbacks, of course. But I think the problem right now is that, and this is, I think this is the fundamental question, is our involvement there, is what we're doing, is it making is it making matters worse or is it making them better? Mm-hmm. And what I'm afraid of right now is that the evidence over the past several years is that our involvement is increasing the number of suicide bombers. They you know, in Vietnam, there were certain places like Saigon that were fairly safe and you could deal. In this country, no place is really safe.
We'll have to leave it at that. We're out of time. Thanks again for being with us.
Joy, my pleasure.
Yeah, Peter Finn, Democratic strategist, president of the Finn Communications Group, and the founder of the Center for Responsive Politics. Thanks to Karen Prager for producing The Hour and to Leo Duran for on-air production. I'm Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network.